repetitive sitting and sitting in a way where we're more sat on our glutes, that we start to essentially change the shape of our spine. And you'll notice when kids are sat on the floor, they're sat bolt upright. If you ever see a little child sitting on the floor, you'll notice they're sitting on their legs, they're not sitting on their glutes.
Welcome to Forever Young, the health and well-being podcast from Lanzerhof. My name is Mario Pedizzoli, and in every episode, join me in conversation with a variety of health experts and special guests as we explore what it means to live well. We may not find the secret to eternal youth, but join me on our quest as we explore just what it means to live a balanced, healthy, and happy life. Hello again and welcome. Well, it's fair to say that modern day habits and lifestyles really do have a lot to answer for. We can all relate to hunching over our phones and computer screens for many hours every day. We can relate to sitting for long periods at a time at our desks, only to head home to then sit on our sofas. And this lifestyle causes aches and stiffness to our bodies, particularly to the spine. Many of us even wake up with aches and pains for no apparent reason. And even though we're encouraged to move, the focus tends to be on the quantity and not the quality of our movement. Think 10,000 steps per day, all measured by our wearable tech. Many runners, for example, well, they may even struggle to touch their toes. And due to the sedentary nature of our modern life, it stands to reason that our muscles and joints are destined to slowly tighten over time. And before we know it, we realize that we can't sit comfortably in a squat, touch our toes, or get up from sitting on the floor without using our hands. Well, to me at least, this all sounds scarily familiar. And in life, if we don't use the movement, we lose the movement. But all is not lost, help is at hand. On this week's show, we welcome movement coach Roger Frampton to tell us about the importance and the benefits of conscious movement. Roger speaks from personal experience as he transformed his inflexible and stiff former self into the stretch and mobility master he is today. I think he likes that title. Roger has developed the Frampton Method, supporting clients to combat loss of functionality through his flexibility and mobility workshops. Roger is also the author of two books, and his TED Talk, Why Sitting Down Destroys You, has been viewed over 4 million times. Well, I think you're on to something, Roger. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for that lovely intro also.
That's okay. Well, look, I did check this morning, 4.6 million views. You happy with that?
It's amazing. Amazing. Yeah, it was obviously quite timely.
I think it speaks volumes for the stiffening nation that we are, that you've got such an audience. So I think it chimes with all of us. So I did read, in reading around the subject and researching you, that you compared your stretching routines to brushing your teeth twice a day at the start and the end of the day. So have you stretched this morning?
I'm stretching.
Have you brushed your teeth this morning?
I have brushed my teeth. I have brushed my teeth this morning. I compared it. And yeah, by the way, I am currently sitting on the floor, so I'm stretching at this very second.
Yes.
And we can definitely talk about that. And I compare it to brushing our teeth because it's a habit, and our lives are really about habits. And I'm always talking about consistency, regularity, which is repetitiveness, as opposed to just doing something for, you know, an hour and then not doing it again.
Well, you're right. This is a Zoom recording, so our listeners cannot see, but I can see you sitting on the floor, stretching away, whilst I'm feeling very self-conscious sitting in a chair, which I think we're going to talk about quite a lot today. So let's move on. And looking, and again, researching you online, Roger, it appeared that you look as if you've been a gymnast all of your life, you know, physically to look at you. So it's hard to imagine that there was a time where, I think you even said yourself, you struggled to touch your toes. So what led you to embark on this transformation from inflexible former self to to this mobility master and guru that you are today?
All right, firstly, I'm definitely not a master. I'm definitely okay. Not a master.
Well, enthusiast, mobility enthusiast, how about that?
Well, yeah, learning every day. Learning every day is what I do, not just from me, but from, you know, the people I coach I'm constantly on a journey myself to improve my movement, learn more about movement. And I often get that, what you said, where people think I'm in, you know, I'd have something to do with gymnastics or I'm an ex gymnast. I modeled for 15 years from the age of like 18 upwards. And so I used to just do, before that, I used to just do gym training. And like, you know, most young guys, right? You just go into the gym, your objective is just to get bigger.
Train what you see in the mirror.
Yeah, you just yeah. And you only train your abs. You never miss chest day. You sometimes do your legs, but that's only, you know, to even yourself out. That's all I did. Flexibility was never really like, just, it wasn't even a thought process for me that it wasn't even important. It was literally just training what you look like. But then fortunately, through modeling, I had to fit a certain silhouette, especially in Milan, Paris, New York, the shows. All of the guys were a 38 suit, and that was the kind of the samples of the clothes. So my agency had a word with me and they were like, listen, you're a little bit big, a little bit beefy, and you're not going to fit this silhouette. So, you know, the type of training that you're doing won't really work. You have to keep a little bit more trim. And so that kind of led me down. That's kind of where it started, really. So then I started, instead of, you know, going to the weights area, I started to get into body weight. And then it was through body weight, I went into an adult gymnastics class. And I thought I was pretty strong, so I thought I'd get on fine. And yeah, it all fell apart because I realized that I couldn't do 90% of the stuff because I'd never trained flexibility. Like, I was strong, I could do a bench press, I could do a weighted squat, I could do what I thought were, you know, essential movements, but I couldn't touch my toes, I couldn't sit in a squat and just relax, like heels down. And loads of basic, what I'd now call essential flexibility, just wasn't there for me. And that was, yeah, I guess in my late 20s, mid to late 20s. And that set me off.
Was that your light bulb moment then, going into that gymnastics class and realizing your limitations?
Yeah, I'd definitely say, looking back, because I started to get into it. It wasn't like, you know, one day I was doing weights and the next day I was like, right, it's all about flexibility. There was definitely steps to that. And one of those steps, and probably the biggest one, was you getting into body weight. I got into like calisthenics, which is kind of like outdoor training, where they do kind of gymnastic elements, but it's more like swinging around bars, and it's all like body weight. I used to train outdoors in Primrose Hill and in different outdoor adult training areas in London, where just essentially you're doing body weight stuff, so like pull-ups, push-ups, all of that. And then I really wanted to get into gymnastics because I was like, well, they're really like the masters of body weight. So I really wanted to get into gymnastics, and that's where I went to this adult gymnastics class. And now that was definitely a light bulb moment, because I realized, you know, I was severely limited. It was like, if you want to do, you know, anything in gymnastics, you have to have this base of flexibility. And all gymnasts, like, you can't be a gymnast if you're inflexible, because the moves require you to be flexible. And if you don't have that flexibility, you're severely limited in what you can do. Or everything becomes harder, everything's more difficult, and all this muscle mass is just in the way.
So maybe a good time to mention that. I think this was in your TED talk, Roger, but maybe you could clarify. At some point, you've said you train the movement, not the muscle. And I think by focusing on the quality of the movement, the muscle shape and definition follows, but it's getting the movement right in the first place. Could you maybe elaborate on that? Because I may not have got that quite right. But
no, you got it absolutely, absolutely right. Yeah, so I always coach movements, not just to myself, but to anyone who's training. So, for example, we have, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of individual muscles within the body. Around these muscles are tissue or fascia or connective tissues. Essentially, you could name all of these muscles separately, but you could also say that all of these muscles are connected or in some shape or form. For example, if someone has back pain, this could be down to the position of their foot landing on the floor as they're running. People could have neck pain. That could be definitely something to do with the way their shoulder blades are moving. Mm. So a lot of pain in the body is referred, and I'm kind of going slightly off track, but I'll bring it back. But a lot of everything is referred, and the way I kind of see the body is we're just like one mass of tissue, and the goal really is to get everything moving as one, or everything moving in sync. Mm. So I don't really train muscles individually, and that's just because I don't see my body as loads of separate muscles. I just see my body as one muscle that I'm trying to move in sync, evenly, as one, and not let anything go ahead or get ahead of itself in either direction. Mm. That makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. And actually, having gone through, well, it's a never-ending process. You've said that. You're on your own journey. But when you look back to your 20-year-old self, and whether it was a light bulb moment or on this journey that you've been on, how has this transformation made you, how's it made you feel? And how do you feel today compared to back then?
I say now, I feel free in my body. Mm. Compared to how when I first started this, I used to get like bouts of back pain and neck pain. I saw like chiropractors, osteopaths. Essentially, I was like going to somebody else for the problem. So I remember going to osteos, to chiropractors, and I'd get a different story each time. And obviously, people are giving me different stories, and that's based on their learning and their theory, right? So if you go to a chiropractor, then they'll start to look at the bones and start to try to manipulate the bones. If you go to a physio, then they might start to look at the muscles individually. And so wherever you're going, you're getting a different story. So when I went into gymnastics, or when I went to this adult gymnastics class, it was more like, well, you can't do that with your body, and you should be able to do that with your body. Why don't you get that back? And then once you get that back, then see if you've still got that back pain, if you've still got your neck pain, if you've still got that knee issue. And so it really became more, I guess, my own responsibility on reobtaining, I'd say, the essential movement that I was born with. Because if you go to an adult, if you go to a gymnastics class, for example, you see the adult class and the kids class, and you'll see all the kids, they're moving amazingly. They've got full flexibility. They can do all these incredible movements. And for them, it's just about, they've just got to learn, like, they've got to more learn the technique, but there's nothing restrictive for them. Whereas the adults, they are limited in what they can do unless they re-achieve a level of flexibility, which makes things more possible for them. So then it really became about, well, I could do this when I was younger, and I can't do it now. So what is the process to get that? And that's why I say get that movement back, not necessarily. So when I talk about a movement, for example, just to make it super clear for anyone, a movement goal for me is like being able to touch your toes. That's like a movement goal. It's attainable. It's real. There's lots of different muscles involved in that. There's the back, there's the calves, there's the hamstrings, there's the neck. There's loads of different muscles involved. But the goal is clear, which is touch your toes. And that's one of thousands of movement goals. I could say be able to sit in a squat. Now, that could be ankles. It could be Achilles. It could be hips. It could be groin. It could be back. Again, lots of different muscle groups involved. But the movement is clear. I can't squat. I can squat.
Maybe a lot of people feeling, well, listening to this, first of all, they can relate to all of this. That's almost certain. And secondly, they might be swimming a bit, thinking, well, where do I start? Give us some advice on that, Roger. You've developed the Frampton method. Where do we start with all this?
Mm. I always advise people to start on what's missing. We're very good at doing what we like to do. And we're very good at repeating the same things that we're good at. And if we're not good at something, we tend to avoid it. And this is something that's learned from schools, right? School is not about them teaching you how to move your body. It's about finding what sport that you'll be good in and sticking to within the parameters of that sport, right? So you'll become like a tennis player, or you're good at tennis, and then you will train to be a tennis player, and you won't really explore any other areas outside of that. And you could say this with, you know, any sport. You could say that with running, you could say that with swimming. And so you only stick within the parameters of that. And that's problematic in itself, because you're not working any other areas. And you become, you know, I guess, a master of one, because you're only focusing on that. Whereas I'm taking an opposite approach. Firstly, my approach is, this is how the human should move. This is, and we can see that from looking at kids. And we can also not just see that from looking at kids, but looking at how primitive humans moved before technology and chairs and everything took over, where we used to, you know, sit around on stools and squat on the floor. And you can still go to, you know, many countries now, you know, Asia, Eastern Europe, Africa, and you'll see humans living in a much more primitive way, mm-hmm. where they are, you know, squatting on the floor very naturally and very comfortably all day long. So there is that argument. Well, you know, of course, you know, kids are more supple. They have, you know, different bone structure. So why should we be moving like kids? I always point to adult examples and go, well, there are plenty of adult examples. It's just not in the Western world. It's changed slightly.
Mm. Okay. Well, that leads us to back to the TED Talk, which was titled "Why Sitting Down Destroys You." And we've also heard sitting compared to the new smoking. Sitting is the new smoking. I mean, are these headline grabbing titles, or is there some truth in these statements?
Sorry, I actually realized I didn't finish the point before about what people can do. So I'm just going to clarify that in a short sentence.
Go for it.
Start with what you can't do. And that's because that's always where injuries and pain will come up. So, okay. For example, if we look at movement, and I've used the example of touching your toes, sit in a squat position, see what's missing as opposed to what you should be able to do naturally. And I do that through like a range of flexibility tests that people can do. So you can test your flexibility in different ways. And then you really want to focus your attention on the area that is limiting the most. So start with what you can't do. Because that is going to be the most problematic. If there is a tight side, really focus on that. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Got it. Okay. And then let's talk about why sitting down destroys you, Roger.
So, yeah, this is an interesting one. It was, and we did a bit of research with this title as well, and I kept putting it out on social media, and I put different titles. So, of course, there is that. You know, what title will do well on YouTube, because you want the most amount of people to be able to see when it comes out. I actually did my TED Talk the same bit as like 6 or 7 other people. For some reason, this title really resonated with some people. You know, I remember at the beginning we were like, male model gets outdone by a 5-year-old gymnast. Or, you know, like the title doesn't really matter too much, but it's the context of what I'm saying, what's important. Now, I was talking about sitting down and why sitting down destroys you, but it's almost unfair. We live in a world where we have to sit down for work. Technology is in a way where the way we work these days, the way offices are set up, a little bit less now because more people are working from home, where they have more options. But the way it's more, I would say, technology, because technology encourages sitting down, which then leads to sedentary lifestyles, which then leads to tightness in the body. So definitely the sitting down part is a factor, because we do it a lot.
Mm. And sitting is the new smoking. I mean, do you think that's overdramatic? But I guess it can lead to disease and illness.
Yeah, well, it's a habit. It's a habit. It's a hard habit to get out of if you're used to doing it all the time, and that's both smoking and sitting. But really, if we break it down to what they are habits. When we're not, and again, you have to consider people that work in an office and don't have the option to work from home, or do not have the option for the standing desk. Then, of course, then they'd have to sit down all day, and that's, you know, that's their job. Or, you know, you're a driver and you work long hours in a lorry or a taxi. You know, there's certain situations where, you know, there isn't standing up cars, or right, so you have to be realistic to that situation. So yeah, and it's key to note here, because a lot of people after were like, well, you know, and I've had people, you know, from standing desk companies approach me and as you can imagine, and gone, yeah, you know, I would love to talk, let you know, now we really want to talk about this standing desk. And it's like, well, to replace standing, you know, to replace sitting with standing is going to lead to another problem. You're still sedentary. You're still standing.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of research into standing for long hours and what that does for your back. Humans are evolved to move. If you want to see a human in its perfect habitat, for anyone who is a parent, just watch your four-year-old playing on the ground. They'll spend lots of time on the ground. They'll not only spend lots of time on the ground, they will change position frequently. Mm. They'll go from cross-legged to a little squat, to a half squat, to kneeling, to squatting. There's like about 10 or 15 different positions that they will keep flipping between. And it's just this constant movement. Unfortunately, they go to school at a young age, and through that schooling is, you need education in your brain is more important than the movement of your body. So we start to drill in education, and through that is attention. So we need you to sit down and pay attention and stare at the screen for X amount of hours per day. And that just starts to get, you know, ruthless as we approach, you know, the end of school, you know, 18, when you're doing, you know, 7-8 hours sitting down, very few breaks. And then from that, people will go into sitting down jobs. So you can go into school, you can start your schooling very flexible, and you come out the other end, you haven't been taught how to move your body, you've been taught about sport, and you also have sat down for a couple of decades. And especially these days with screens and how schooling is more technology based. So of course that is going to lead to a deficit in movement.
And what is your advice there, Roger, for those of us and those that are sitting at their desks? What's the simple takeout that we could take from today's podcast about how to break that up? What do you recommend we do?
So for people in different circumstances, I always recommend different things. So, for example, for those people working from home that do have the option of variety, I always say you can sit on the floor in multiple positions, like I am right now, and I will do this for many Zoom calls. I will sit for periods on a chair in multiple positions, which I can talk about and tell people how to do, and then also stand for some periods and walk around the house for some periods. So ideally, you're trying to mimic this variety concept. You're trying to get as much variety as possible. For those who, you know, the option is, I just have to sit down all day. There isn't the option for the sitting on the floor, the standing desk, and you're at the office. One of the biggest, well, there's a couple of things that I can give them straight away. First is try to sit on your legs instead of your glutes. When you sit on your glutes, your pelvis is in an untucked or a tucked position. Mm-hmm. And you want to ideally try to sit on your hamstrings. If you were to try to sit on your hamstrings, it would encourage your torso would just lift upwards, and you wouldn't be sat. You'd be sat forward position.
I'm trying to picture that. Do you mean kneeling on the floor, sitting back on your haunches, if you like?
No, this is on the chair.
On the chair.
So, you're sat on the chair right now.
Okay, talk me through this.
Perfect. So you're sat on the chair right now. Instead of before, you were slightly more on the sat on your glutes, you're more resting on the back of the chair. Now you're sat more on your legs. Instantly, your whole torso is now upright. As long as you can maintain sitting on your legs, it will almost feel impossible to round your spine whilst you're sitting on the legs. So your focus is sitting on the legs. That does a couple of things. One, it stops what people would have heard of as squashing your glutes or inactive glutes. There's a lot of that in gym talk where we're trying to fire up people's glutes. This is one of the reasons is that is we sit on them all day. Number two, you're not using the back of your chair. You're actually holding your body up yourself. So you're using your own strength, and you're using your spine for what it's for, to hold you upright, as opposed to resting and allowing something else to do that for you. So you're essentially here, you're mimicking sitting on a stool.
And you'll
find you're sat right on the edge of the chair, and it's almost like you're going to fall forwards as opposed to backwards. So you've got this slight leverage.
Well, first of all, you're now mindful of how you're sitting, and I think that's the point, isn't it? That as long as you're conscious of how you're sitting, you can do something about it. If you just don't give it a second thought, then you probably will default into this horrible hunch position that I know I do. So that feels much more comfortable,
And you probably will, but in 10 minutes time you'll forget, and you'll probably go back into that. And that's all good. Whenever you're learning something new or something different that you're not used to doing, especially if you've sat on a chair for decades and you're just used to sitting in a certain position. One of the biggest hacks, and it almost mimics, I spoke about this lady called Esther Gokley in my talk, where she's like mimic the posture of sitting on a horse. So you literally sit on your legs and you can see the torso shape. And it's almost because usually whenever we're thinking about, good posture or sitting upright, usually it's something to do with, we think about it, something changes in the torso. So we're actually trying to do this. But if you sit on your glutes and then try to do that, it actually just feels weird. Whereas if you can move through your hips, your torso changes anyway.
And you do talk about the S-shaped spine versus the J-shaped spine. I think this is all related to that, isn't it?
Yeah, this is super interesting. So she actually did a little bit of research in indigenous cultures and found places where back pain hardly exists. And she was saying in her talk, I remember studying her talk before I did mine, because I was looking at research and I really wanted to add something on, which I thought was really important, because she spoke about in indigenous cultures, they have this J-shaped spine. And I contacted her before I did this talk. And I said, so, when you're saying, when you went to these places, because she didn't say in her talk, we're born with a J-shaped spine. She was talking about what she found when she researched these places. And then I said to her, would you say the same, for young children? And she's like, yeah, exactly the same, because then the shape of the spine doesn't change. So I think so I really wanted to add that in, because I think her talk was amazing, what she was talking about. I really wanted to add it in, that it was so important that people understood that this is the shape of spine that we're born with. It's through repetitive sitting, and sitting in a way where we're more sat on our glutes, that we start to essentially change the shape of our spine. And you'll notice when kids are sat on the floor, they're sat bolt upright. If you ever see a little child sitting on the floor, you'll notice they're sitting on their legs, they're not sitting on their glutes, because it's exhausting to sit in that way. You feel like you are falling backwards. But if you get an adult to try that or mimic that on the floor, because of tightness, they won't be able to achieve that same position. So that's why the flexibility component is so important, because it's that limitation in flexibility which will stop you being able to do what you should be able to do naturally.
But it's all attainable. I think that's your point, isn't it, Roger? Because you even put up on the screen a picture of you as a little child in that sit-squat position. And I think, looking at your coaching, you can see how an adult can one day get back to that, and you show progression with blocks and so on, but it is perfectly achievable, and the benefits, of course, are many.
Yeah, it's so important that people know it is achievable. And the difference between, I guess, this stuff and what I'm talking about is it's not very sexy, because this is what I'm meaning. In most gym and fitness talk, there's always a very quick win. It's like 6 weeks till. Mm-hmm. And that sounds appealing to people. People want things quickly and they want it now, especially this day and age where we live in. People want things immediately. People want things yesterday. January is just, everything is now. The problem with that and flexibility is they don't go together very well. For example, if you went for a run today and you hadn't been running for a while, and then you ran the following day, you'd see that you can make an improvement very quickly. You can see a very quick win. It'll inspire you to run more. And you can see, actually, do you know what? I can improve in my running very quickly. You could apply that same philosophy to gym training. You could do a bench press. The next day you go in, you can put a little bit more on and you'd achieve that. And you've got that quick win. Flexibility, it can't work like that. We're stretching tendons. We're stretching, we're moving around the joints. It's a very delicate process. And you don't want to rush this. This is something that's going to improve over time. You're not going to see anything in a couple of weeks. You'll feel better through doing it. And I'd love to say to people, 6 weeks and you would achieve this. So I always advise, when doing any of this flexibility, mobility work, when you're literally changing the shape of the way your spine is, that you always look to long-term goals. So right now, I am 37. I am thinking about how I am going to be moving when I'm 50. I don't care what I'm going to be moving like in 6 months or in a few years' time. I'm really focused right now on a decade and keeping that going. Because the reality is, a lot of the conversation I spent with people 60s, 70s, telling me it's too late, and people in their 20s, 30s telling me they'll deal with it when they're dealing with it later. So yeah. I'm kind of stuck in the middle, listening to two different sides of the coin.
Sure. And I think you're right. We're so results focused, aren't we? And how long for this and how long for that? But 1 year down the line, what progression can we expect? Let's say we're talking about that 50 plus person who's been sitting at the desk all his or her life, struggles to touch his toes, her toes. What can we expect if we're just doing a little and often every day? Give us an idea. Yeah.
If you are consistent, and like my first book was based on 10 minutes a day, and that's really to hammer home the key of little and often, because that is what will firstly form the habit, which is what will get the result. So, and through that little and often, what can you expect? Well, firstly, the first thing that you should be expecting is a bigger self-awareness about how your body moves. The first time you stretch and you do mobility work, it's very slow. You have to be very self-aware. You get to become very self-aware about what's missing. You figure out a lot more about your body. This is why I said at the beginning, I'm certainly not a master. Every day I figure stuff out about my body, its own learned habits, through, many years of, not doing any of this. I'm constantly learning. But yeah, you'll definitely see improvement. It just will teach you to be very patient. You'll become a more patient person, and you'll become much more self-aware and much more appreciative of what you're doing. So as I said, it's taken me many years to not, want it. And I knew that question was coming, and that's always the question. And it's from everyone, right? Everyone is like, yeah, but how long? But how long? Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's famous like kung fu quotes where it's like, on this topic, but it's always that. And it's as long as it takes for you to not become immobile as you get older. And because that's really what it's about. I live, in Gloucestershire, You know, my neighbors are like 80, 90 in the village that I live in. And, you know, I walk around and I see broken bodies. Mm. I also know in China, they're out 80, 90 year olds dancing in the parks every day, taking care of their bodies. And so for me, it's not an age thing. This is a culture thing. Mm-hmm. We're not living that way. And I know it's possible because there's people in other countries, you know, squatting in the streets at a very old age, not having all the knee pain that we've got in the Western world. So it's definitely, this is not an age thing. It's not an age argument. It's saying we can do this. We know it's possible, but we need people to really start to incorporate this and not do this as, you know, flexibility has become that thing that, you know, you just add it on to the end of the workout. You do your run and you do a bit of flexibility
stretch
after.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You just do that, you know, the runner's stretch where you just, you know, stand there with your foot, you hold your foot for 30 seconds. For me, it's the main component. It's just, it's because that's my access to my body. If I lose that, then I'm, you know, my body starts to have to compensate. And it quickly changes. You know, for example, I put up stuff sometimes on, you know, practicing balance. And it's always like, yeah, but I can balance. And it's like, yeah, I know you can now, but one day you won't be able to, and you really appreciate the fact that you can stand on one leg. And that standing on one leg is essentially an exercise for walking. Every time you walk, you're standing on one leg, standing on one leg, standing on one leg. It's so important. So you just really have to appreciate the movement that you have of your body. A squat is really, what's that? It's getting up out of a chair without using your hands. You know, unaided. And again, it's something that you're really going to appreciate as you get older. To be moving around unaided, to be able to sit on the floor and get up again, you know, without the use of a wall or something else. This is the kind of stuff I'm dealing with, you know, my clients, my customers. I'm dealing with, you know, real life situations, not, you know, this is what you're going to look like, but, you know, let's make sure that you can, you know, walk unaided and you can take care of your body. If you fall over, you've got the ability to stand back up again.
You mentioned China. There's a Chinese proverb you refer to, you are as old as your spine, which I think really does hit home. But it sounds like, from what you're saying, if I understood correctly, that your spine age, if you like, can be reversed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Through training. And like I spoke earlier about like chiropractic, and the aim of chiropractic is to adjust your spine. For me, like the foundation of the body is the tissue. And if you're strong in a certain area or a certain part of your body, it literally has the ability to pull your bones and joints into a different direction or out of position. So it's through that repetitive stretching or strength, whatever is required for that position, to essentially change how your bone structures are. Like the way my elbows and wrists move now is completely different to how they moved like a decade ago. It's weird. It's like, you know, I would years ago, I would have naturally thought that there's no way that my wrists and my elbows can move in those directions.
That's really fascinating. Describe that a bit more, Roger.
So like the actual rotation of my shoulder and the movement of my wrists, the movement of my joints, like in my hands and my elbows, is completely different to how they used to be. I didn't used to be able to do that because there was so much tightness and limitation there. So to actually retrain that, it's almost like straight, like the fact that I couldn't touch my toes is so like weird to me now that it's like, just through that repetition and, you know, and, you know, there's that can go to extremes. It's just crazy to look at, especially that, you know, that through that repetition, like you can change the structure of your body and the way you are. And that, you know, that's what I love about it. It's like, you actually have the power to change how you hold your body, how your body moves. I find it fascinating.
Fascinating and inspiring, actually. And what are your biggest success stories amongst your clients, without naming names, obviously, but you know, what have you seen that must be its own reward as well to see that progress?
I'd say Well, there was a lady I mentioned in my second book. When I first coached her, she could stand on one leg for 10 seconds. She had some knee issues and knee operations. She can now stand on one leg for a minute. And I noticed, you know, to some people who are younger who are listening, you know, as I said, this might not hit home for you now, but that's a big deal. That's for me, that's huge. That's like, she's mid-70s and she's, you know, doing what it takes. That was through repetition, through practice. It could have been easily, she could have easily said, you know what, you know, this isn't for me. You know, I can't do this. I'm too old. But, you know, she's got so much courage. She stuck to it, and that 10 seconds was 12 seconds and 20 seconds. I even had it where I basically, every time she balanced, I would just pause the clock every time she stopped until we got that minute. And sometimes it was 20 minutes of the session to get that minute. And it was frustrating, and, you know, we had to change tactics. And it's just, it sounds so simple. And, you know, this concept you can use with anything. It takes resilience, and it almost teaches you to be like a much more, you know, dedicated person. But it's really lovely, the reward, the other side. And the same with that. It's crazy to see her standing on one leg now and go, I remember when it was just 10 seconds. Now we can kind of laugh and joke about that. And I was like, I remember when you were 10 seconds. And now, you know, we'll go to the next part. Now you're going to, you know, balance with your eyes closed. Mm-hmm. And that seems impossible right now. But let's take it to the extreme. Let's, you know, take it up a notch. Let's keep the body learning. So yeah, it's just stuff like that. It's simple. Or it'll just be like an email I get randomly, where someone said, oh, I've been doing your thing, following your program for however long, and I just feel much better about myself, or I feel I know my body better. Mm. It's stuff like that. It's never really like, oh, you know, I look great. I find that all quite boring. It's more like the other aspect where someone feels a lot different about themselves. They're more confident in their body. Mm. You know, that feeling and that, you know, owning their body. Or they couldn't do this and now they could do it and they didn't think they'd ever get to do that.
The self-esteem that comes from it, I think you're referring to, isn't it? That people feel good about themselves and probably an enhanced quality of life too.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just incredible. I mean, yeah, I used to always be about, right, I know, like the physical aspect and, you know, what it looks like and, you know, to get a six-pack. And, you know, I grew up in the fashion world. It's very visual. And, I just really appreciate the little, you know, the little moments, which is more about, you know, how someone feels about themselves. And then it's because, you know, as soon as they've seen that, as soon as they've got that golden nugget, that will inspire them to do it further. Mm-hmm. And then also they're going to be examples. Other people are going to see them and then they'll go, oh, okay, well, actually, maybe I can do it if they can do it.
Very true. And how about you personally, Roger? What are you working on at the moment with your own personal mobility and flexibility? Is there any challenges you're setting yourself or progressing towards?
I'm pretty much working on everything that I'm not very good at, which is definitely, like, for example, I was walking the dog or dogs. And when I walk the dogs, I've always got this habit of throwing a ball with my right hand, and my left hand, it feels weird. It feels funny and it doesn't feel right. There's a different power. There's a different feeling. I'm not sure what joint moves first, but I'm trying to match that up. And I'm trying to teach my left hand what my right hand is good at. Stuff like that I'm working on, which is like, we're probably not what you'd expect. I'm fascinated in learning different ways to stand up from the floor without using your hands. Because I think it's just, you know, it's so important, you know, as people get older. I'm really trying to identify all the different separate innate positions that children sit in when they're younger. Mm. How many they are and how many different combinations of them and how you can move from one to the other. But for me, it's about scaling exercises. And I guess that's my main focus. So basically, for example, for that, I'll take like an exercise in gymnastics, and which is, you know, to most people looks ridiculous. And then I'll take someone who's extremely immobile that finds it problematic to sit on the floor because they get knee pain. Mm. And it's like, how can I get them? Because in my head, I'm getting them to this ultimate gymnast move. They don't know that, right? But in my head, I'm like, how can I get them to that? And I'm like, okay, well, first we need to do that. Now to do that, we need to do that. So it's just how many steps in between is going to get them to that? And how can I scale it in a way where this is possible for anyone and everyone? So I love it when someone comes up with another limitation, because I'm like, all right, okay. It now becomes a game to get around that.
So there's hope for us all, Roger, is what you're saying. Wherever we are on that line or on that curve, we can be that. We can go from sitting to standing without using our hands from the floor.
You can. And I always say that you can if you want to. And it's such a big one. I noticed on, for example, I used to, like, when I first started this, right, I was like, everyone needs to do this. Flexibility is amazing. Flexibility is the best. And mobility is awesome. And now lately, I'm not really on that. I'm really helping the people that want the help and have literally come across the realization where they're like, I really need this in my life. Firstly, they're an absolute pleasure to work with because I'm not trying to force anything. I'm not like, you really need to do this. I don't have to convince them, right? They've already, you know, seen something that's made them realize. And the fact that they want to do it makes the process a lot easier. So I'm constantly looking for people that want to make a difference and constantly not looking for people who they're just like, who don't see it. Whereas before, I felt like I needed to convince the world how good flexibility is. Now it's like, it's fine. Now it's like, that's cool. I get that a lot of people are not even going to resonate with this, or even it's not even going to come to their attention. But some people, and, you know, I'll have it when I do a talk, a few people come up to me at the end and they'll be like, that really resonated. Or, you know, I can really see what you mean. And, do you know what I mean? And that's, oh, okay, cool. You know, I don't have to convince the other 90%. And then I'm left with a community of people around me who really see the benefit. We can have really powerful and strong conversations around it. The fact that they want to do it means that they'll actually do the work. And yeah, it's just, so yeah, just stop convincing them, trying to convince them.
Well, so it's about an attitude first. And for those that want to, you can work with them. And I'm sure there are lots of people listening that do want to, Roger, and I think you've been really quite an inspiration today. And the good news is that we will be arranging soon a workshop here at Lanzerhof at the Arts Club with Roger. So if you are interested, please do email us at lanzerhof@theartsclub.co.uk. Roger, before we round off, what simple takeouts will you give our listeners, you know, in some simple life advice as to how we go forward?
Okay, sure. Just on that last point, if you just don't want to, try to come to the workshop anyway, and maybe through being there, I will show you. You'll see some stuff that you can do, and that will motivate. I love working with beginners, people who have not even dived into this world, or, you know, just, or, you know, maybe like a little bit overwhelmed by it. I love, you know, working with bodies. So yeah, the more beginner, the better, because, you know, I love working with any limitations or any joint problems or anything, because I'm always finding a way. And so even if you don't want to come down, and then you can make the decision at the end. What final, I don't know, I'm not really good at life advice. I've just become the movement guy, and I've just kind of stuck with that. I'm quite lucky because I love it, and because I love it and I find the topic interesting and fascinating, then it's actually become quite easy. I write about it, and then whenever I'm writing about the topic, I generally find it enjoyable. Whenever I'm teaching a workshop or a class, I genuinely enjoy it. So I guess the life advice there is, you know, do find something that you enjoy. if there was anything, but that's just me, and that's just what I enjoy. So
find your passion.
And Yeah, well, I excel it. I guess I excel in it. And I've, you know, people go, oh, you know, you wrote books on this. It must be so hard to write a book. And I was like, well, or a TED talk, which took a year to rehearse. And it's like, well, it's not really. It wasn't that as hard as I thought it would have been. If I didn't love it, it would have been a lot harder, put it that way. And the fact that I know, and I was saying earlier, you know, if ever I get like an email through and someone's, you know, been, you know, reading a book and, you know, they've taken some inspiration from it and it's made a difference to their life, then, you know, little stuff like that makes it worthwhile, because, you know, like, actually what I'm saying, you know, is making a difference to people out there.
Well, Roger, really enjoyed talking to you today. Whether you're the mobility master or the movement guy, as you just described yourself, I think you've enlightened us all. And please do come along, meet Roger, and let's all try his workshop at a date coming soon. But Roger, thanks again.
Thanks, Mario. Appreciate you having me on and allowing me to talk to your listeners and spread the message of movement.
Cheers, Roger. We'll see you again very soon.
All right. Take care.
All the best.